The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Lots going on here at the mid part of the week. Today, I want to update you or give you the latest on America's death camps, the abortion mills, these videos that keep coming out revealing all of these gruesome details of this lucrative business. I want to talk also about the continuing immigration crisis in Europe and also in the United States, on both sides of the Atlantic. And also, I want to look a little bit more closely at the money behind the Iran deal, a really interesting article that we'll look at in segment two, to see how money is buying influence. Don't forget also that today is Trumpet Hour Day. It's Wednesday, a good day to catch up on all the most significant developments in the news this week. That program will be playing at the top of the hour after this one. But for this particular show, I want to start with Robert Morley's feature today at thetrumpet.com. The fear index explodes, as he wrote this morning, as world careens toward a global market meltdown. He talked about all of the anxiety and fear and worry that skyrocketed on Monday due to the ongoing instability of the markets around the world. This fear index, or sometimes it's called the fear gauge, as he says in his article. The computer algorithms couldn't handle the unprecedented volume as the index tripled. Mr. Morley says the last time the index reacted so sharply, bad things followed. Think 2008 Great Recession, the Wall Street meltdown. He said, but market participants should not have been flying blind. The fear gauge was pinging all month. It shouldn't have been a surprise. Warning signs have been there. And yet, if you continue reading in his article, here you have these worrisome facts together with the fear index. And then, as he brings out in his article, all of these comments from leaders in the West, really smart people, who are telling us that everything's going to be all right. A lot of people are running scared, but the leaders, it seems, are still very confident. What is God thinking? What is God's perspective on what we see happening? It took a lot of smart people to build the world's economic system. Why is it so fragile? Why is it hanging by a thread? Why are so many people now worried and fearful about what's coming next? Notice this. This is from Robert's article. On Monday, as world stock markets followed China and the United States into the red, it became clear that it caught authorities off guard. In Australia, both Finance Minister Joe Hockey and Prime Minister Tony Abbott took to the airwaves to reassure investors after Australia's benchmark stock index dove at the sharpest rate since 2009. And then he quotes Mr. Hockey, the finance minister. I'm absolutely confident, he said twice, that the fundamentals of the Australian economy and the global economy are still good, are still good. He's repeating himself. He's doubly confident. The fundamental signs are still good, without doubt. That is the situation. That's what he said on the Australian Today Show. In fact, there is no crisis now. It's a correction. Mr. Morley asks. Could he have mentioned absolutely confident one more time? Why is it when world leaders say that they're absolutely sure of something, that that's almost always the sign of just how fragile the system really and truly is? I think it's important that people don't hyperventilate, Prime Minister Abbott said. The fundamentals are sound. Robert says in his article that we were hearing a lot of the same statements in 2008, just before the crash. Everything, it will be okay. It's fundamentally sound, we were told. That's something in itself to worry about. When prime ministers, presidents, leaders, and the like get in front of the cameras and start telling you that everything's going to be okay, as if they have it all figured out, as if the problems really aren't as bad as they seem. I asked about God's thinking, God's perspective. God's trying to humble us. The proverb says, pride goes before destruction. Pride comes before the fall. Proverbs 26:12 says, do you see a man wise in his own eyes? There is more hope for a fool than for him. There's a lot of men and women today who are very wise in their own eyes. God says there's more hope for a fool. If you remember, some of you will remember this, back in 2008, when there was so much hope and optimism associated with Barack Obama's campaign. Sky-high approval ratings, 70% or so. That was in 2008. That was when a good many people in America and even around the world felt like all of our problems would be solved. But look at people today. People are running scared. People are unsure about the future. People don't feel like their children will be better off. So many are unhappy, out of work, frustrated. It didn't take long for reality to set in. After all, the hoopla surrounding the 2008 election, it makes you wonder what next year will be like. Already, the United States is in full campaign mode. And I suppose there's going to be optimism galore once again as someone steps forward, assuring us that he or she has all the answers, has it all figured out. Notice what we wrote. This is in January 2009, right as President Obama was coming into office for the first time. We said, soon it will be this new government grappling with international security concerns that exceed the military's capabilities, being mistreated by foreign governments, trying desperately to keep the economy from tanking, sinking deeper into debt, and so on. We said it will be this government letting people down. That's what we said right at the start of the administration, right when everyone was in agreement, so many, 70% approval ratings. Finally, we have a solution. Finally, we have a leader to make America great again. But we were saying right at the beginning, well, we gave you the reality. It's not that we want to be pessimistic. We just give you the truth as God spells it out in the Bible. America is in the midst of a stunning decline. And no one man is going to stop that. Doesn't matter what side of the political aisle he's on. If it were to be stopped or reversed, it would take wholesale change, repentance on the part of the American people. But coming back to the leadership, just to focus on this point for a minute, about how confident, I'm absolutely confident, this Australian foreign or finance minister said twice. He repeated himself. He's so sure nothing bad could happen. There was a piece in Foreign Affairs just the other day talking about the current U.S. administration and just the many failures that administration has experienced with respect to its foreign policy. This article is by Brett Stevens, a really sharp commentator on foreign affairs. And he's writing his column basically about another column that pins the blame for all of the foreign policy struggles of the Obama administration on his predecessor. Here we are 7 years in, and Brett Stevens is saying, well, when does that run out? How much longer can you go on blaming the previous administration? Stevens writes, start with the promises. This is speaking of the current administration, of which Obama made plenty when he came to office. The prison at Guantanamo Bay was to be shut within a year. Relations with Russia would be reset. The United States' good name would be restored in such places as Cairo, Istanbul, and Damascus. Israeli settlement expansion would end, and peace with the Palestinians would be forged. Much of this was to be achieved, so it seemed, through the sheer moral force of Obama's personality and the compelling logic of his ideas. Yet none of it occurred. None of it actually happened. I mean, this is routine in Washington. Promises, promises. Where's the follow-through? Stevens goes on and talks about the rise of ISIS under President Obama's watch. Russia being on the march. Now billions of dollars going to Iran, where it's sure to be redirected to its anti-American proxies in Lebanon, in Yemen, in Iraq, in the Gaza Strip, in Afghanistan. Notice this, though. This paragraph really jumped out at me. It says, and as for the country's friends, here's a sampler of some of their more candid views. Then Polish Foreign Minister Radoslaw Sikorski, secretly taped in 2014, quoted as saying, the Polish-American alliance is worthless, even harmful, as it gives Poland a false sense of security. Israeli Defense Minister Moshe Yaalon, this is from a 2014 speech, if your image is feebleness, it doesn't pay in the world. He was speaking about the United States. The former Saudi intelligence chief, in comments made public in 2013, U.S. policy toward Syria, quote, would be funny if it were not so blatantly perfidious and designed not only to give Mr. Obama an opportunity to back down, but also to help Assad butcher his people. These are just a few samples of America's friends and what they think about American retreat. Earlier this year, Stevens writes, Obama invited the heads of state of the Gulf Cooperation Council for a meeting at Camp David. Most sent their deputies and understudies in their place, a gesture of contempt. You might remember when that happened. They sent all these junior partners because they don't view the current administration as serious about bringing peace to the region of the Middle East or maintaining stability even. Right at the end of his article, Stephen says, the world has already entered an era in which global disorders, spurred by American retreat, are proliferating at rates that are increasingly hard to contain, much less defeat. And those disorders are blurring whatever distinction there might once have been between the core and the periphery. In other words, we're slipping into a state of chaos, worldwide chaos. Soon it will be, we said in 2009. This government, this new government, soon it will be this new government grappling with international security concerns that exceed the military's capabilities, being mistreated by foreign governments, trying desperately to keep the economy from tanking, sinking deeper into debt, and so on. It will be this government letting the people down. That was the Trumpet's forecast, based upon so many prophecies. Like this one I want to read to you in the book of Jeremiah, chapter 10. God, as I said a moment ago, God is trying to humble us. He's trying to teach us a lesson. He's trying to show us that man's ways won't work apart from God. He's trying to show us the futility of our vain imaginations, to think that we have all the answers, to think that we have all the solutions. Jeremiah 10 and verse 23, it says, O Lord, I know that the way of man is not in himself. It is not in man that walks to direct his steps. We don't know how to walk, in other words. We don't know the proper course. Proverbs 14:12 says, there's a way that seems right to man, but it ends in death. Here, Jeremiah says, it's not in man to walk to direct his steps. We just don't know. Verse 24, Jeremiah 10:24, O Lord, correct me, but with judgment, not in your anger, lest you bring me to nothing. Give us the correction that we need, God. Show us the way. Light up our path. Inspire our decisions. Give us wisdom. Give us understanding. The lesson God's trying to teach mankind is that we need to put our lives in His hands. We need to let God take the lead. Otherwise, we end up deceiving ourselves and many others to go along with it. I am absolutely confident everything's okay. All the fundamentals are strong and sure. No need to hyperventilate. The foundation is sound. There's no cracks. The situation's under control. Well, we'll have to see as we continue to look at what is happening in this world. There's a piece today, also at the Trumpet, Islamic terrorists enter the United States through Mexico. This, again, is our reporting. A report on a report about the smuggling that's going on. Muslim terrorists, it says, are entering Texas with the assistance of Mexican drug cartels. According to a July 30th report from Judicial Watch, so you have terrorists now, Muslim terrorists, working in conjunction with the drug cartels, whose territory now is reaching into the United States. Look at the area in and around Tucson, Arizona, El Paso, Texas. You have drug cartels controlling U.S. territory, of all things. And now they're helping smuggle in terrorists. According to the report, drug cartels smuggle special interest aliens into stash areas around Ocala, Texas, approximately 50 miles from El Paso on Highway 20. Terrorists then wait there until they receive orders to disperse into other American regions. And the article goes on to talk about just the most recent terrorist attacks on U.S. soil. Quite a few of them in the last several years. Smuggled in by the drug cartels. Look at the crime and the violence that we're just inviting into our nations. There was another story today about the problem in Britain. 8 million, I think the figure is now. 8 million foreign-born residents living on this little island. Ann Coulter, in her her book, Adios America, she points out, I think this is in chapter 7, she points out how the government doesn't collect data about immigrant crime. You think that they'd be tracking that as close as any other statistic, but they just don't track that information. They're not interested in collecting it, and even if they were, the media wouldn't report on it. Because, as I said yesterday, the media is working actively to cover it up. To cover up just how bad the problem really and truly is. We've talked quite often about those thugs that are roaming the streets, committing random acts of violence. But then there's those within the prison population and just the skyrocketing numbers in that community. This is taken from page 104 of Ann Coulter's book. It says, then there's the explosion of America's prison population since we began admitting millions of third world immigrants in the 1970s. From 1925 until 1970, a steady 0.1% of the population was in state or federal prison. Thus, in 1925, when the U.S. population was 100 million, there were about 100,000 people in prison. And in 1970, when there were 200 million Americans, there were 200,000 in prison. Then, suddenly, just as a very different sort of immigration began to be admitted under Teddy Kennedy's 1965 Immigration Act, the prison population skyrocketed. If the incarceration rate had remained the same, there would only be about 310,000 people in prison today. Instead, there are more than 2 million prisoners in America. And then notice this final statement. Since 1970, the U.S. population has increased by one-third, but the prison population has nearly sextupled. A lot of factors affect incarceration rates: liberal judges, destructive social programs, illegitimacy, and social decay. But those come and go. Immigration, she says, is forever. And she's right there at the end, to be sure. Not necessarily that they go. I don't think the liberal judges or destructive social programs or illegitimacy is a passing fad by any means, but they are factors, and no doubt sizable ones, to the explosion of prisoners that we see in the United States. But how much of this increase can be directly attributed to illegal immigration? Well, as she goes on to point out in her book, even when the government's not working to collect the statistics, what little you can collect on your own, as she did in her book, shows just how big of a problem this is and how it is burdening down America's prison system. How so many of our prisons are filled with illegal immigrants. My father, in that cities burned with fire article I forget which magazine it was in. It was recently, one of the last couple of issues. He quoted Isaiah 1 and verse 7. Your city, your country, sorry, is desolate. Your cities are burned with fire. Your land, strangers devour it in your presence. And it is desolate as overthrown. It's desolate. Overthrown. My father called this a lightning bolt prophecy. And he said it's a guarantee that our national problems are going to get worse if we don't listen to God. You see, God's trying to tell us something. God's trying to wake us up. God's trying to humble us. My father said he's pleading with us to hear his message, to listen to him, and to fear him. But who listens to God today? Who listens to God today? I am absolutely confident that everything's going to work out great. All the fundamentals are sound. Everything's in order. No danger. Anywhere that you look. What must God be thinking? What must God be thinking? Here he is pleading with us to hear his message, to listen to what he has to say, pleading with us to fear him, to follow him, to get behind and to support his work, to humbly acknowledge that we don't know the way. We don't have the solutions. We need you. We need your guidance. We need your direction. Teach us. Teach us. Correct us. But with judgment, not in anger, lest you bring me to nothing, but correct us. Show us the way to walk. Show us how to direct our steps. If we had that kind of attitude, God would intervene. God would reveal the way to go. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. The live stream is available online anywhere in the world at kpcg.fm. Thank you for your feedback of late. You can send your comments or suggestions to td@kpcg.fm. That's td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Now to just update you on America's death camps, that's what they are, these abortion mills that are all over the nation. Since 1973, some 50 million, 60 million even, unborn babies killed right inside the United States of America. This latest undercover video exposes a company that works along with Planned Parenthood. Stem Express is the name of the company. It buys aborted baby parts from Planned Parenthood and then sells them to researchers. Notice how this discussion unfolds. These body parts that are shipped to researchers.
I know we get requests for, it's the hardest thing in the world to ship.
You do is the whole calvarium.
That's it. Yeah, that's the easiest way. And I mean, we've actually had good success with that in the past. So
like, make sure the eyes are closed.
Yeah. Tell the lab it's coming. Yeah. Sit all open the box.
Yeah, oh, I know.
So, whereas so many of the academic labs cannot fly like that, they're just not capable.
Why is that? I don't understand that.
It's almost like they don't want to know where it comes from. Megan seen that, where they're like, we need limbs, but no hands and feet need to be attached. And you're like,
or they just want the long bones and they don't want to see that
they want you to take it all off. Make it so that we don't know what it is.
Yeah.
It's like,
bone the chicken for me and then,
that's we'll, it.
You know, and
like,
then I'll eat it.
But we know before. What it is. I mean, with their lab.
So this goes to that whole stigma.
Oh, yeah. And their lab techs freak out and have meltdowns. And so it's just kind of like.
So that's STEM Express. Talking about how they ship these body parts. I'm not sure how well you could have heard all of the back and forth there. But the undercover man there in the video talks about the calvarium, which is the head of the baby. And if they send the entire head intact, and then that's what led up to the laughter there, where... tell the lab that it's coming so they don't open up the box and see this baby's head. She went on to say how that researchers are, some of them anyway, squeamish when they didn't need to be, really. We need the limbs, but don't include the hands or the feet so it doesn't actually look like an arm or a leg. Make it so that we don't know what it is. If we don't recognize it as a baby, then maybe we won't be so conflicted. She mentioned how that some lab technicians just freak out and have meltdowns there at the end of that clip because of what they see. Yet another bone-chilling installment from this company that's released a series of these videos. Much of it just difficult to even stomach. You know, a few years ago, this was reported in the news, and I think it was Joel Hilliker wrote about it in 2009. About how that Planned Parenthood was caught on tape here again, pressuring women to take the abortion route. It is big business, after all. Big business. But video showing back in 2009, workers even lying to women to pressure them to have abortions. And then you have all these latest revelations. And every time you see it, you have to think about passages of Scripture like 2 Timothy 3, where Paul talked about the perilous times that would come in these latter days. How that men would love themselves and would lack even natural affection. Without natural affection, it says. Lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God. That same passage, by the way, talks about silly women laden with sins, being led away with diverse lusts. There's a scripture over in Romans 1. I talked about this on a television program recently. Romans 1:26, where it speaks of women changing the natural use. Just going against common sense, nature, God's creation, obviously God's laws. We look at our society today, there's so much hardness, so little natural affection, not even with natural affection, without natural affection, to use Paul's language. Where is the... well, what used to be termed the sanctity of life. America's death camps. You look at the things that continue to spew out of the mouths of Iranian representatives. They're pushing to raise up their death camps. One calling for, just yesterday, all Jews to be annihilated. This is from Israel Hayom. Iran's anti-Israel policies remain strongly in place. Hossein Sheikh Hoslem, the international affairs advisor to the Speaker of the Iranian Parliament, said on Tuesday, "Our positions against the usurper Zionist regime have not changed at all," he said. "Israel should be annihilated. And this is our ultimate slogan. We're not backing away from that. And we expect you, by the way, to pay us back all that money. Lift those sanctions. If you want your embassy back, Britain, you've got to fix it yourself. Never mind what we did 4 years ago." That's the tone, the strident tone that Iran continues to take. Sheikh Holsom's comments, it says, came following British Foreign Secretary Philip Hammond's visit to Tehran, during which Hammond claimed that the current Iranian government, led by President Hassan Rouhani, has displayed a more nuanced approach toward Israel than previous Iranian governments. Isn't that nice? He's not like Ahmadinejad. It's more nuanced. Rouhani is. Sheikh Holsom, it says, also said Iran would never forget the past and Britain's colonialist moves. Never forget. Part of their ultimate slogan, only it's not about the Holocaust. Never forget British colonialism. And Britain moves back in there. Happily makes the repairs, even going against its own vow from 4 years ago, saying that they see no limit now to this new and budding relationship. Even as Iran cries out for all of Israel to be annihilated. Just to highlight this tone, this confident, arrogant tone. Iran pushes back on nuclear disclosure at Vienna IAEA meeting. It says, it's from the Wall Street Journal, Iranian officials warned the United Nations Atomic Agency not to bow to pressure from U.S. lawmakers to detail its probe into Tehran's past nuclear work, warning Iran will not accept any leaks of their discussions. Notice further, it says, speaking after the meeting, the Iranian rep dismissed the charge that Iran ever worked on nuclear weapons, reiterating Iran's line that these were baseless allegations to use to justify sanctions. Finally, it says the IAEA should at the same time exercise, this is quoting the Iranian negotiator or the Iranian representative, the IAEA should at the same time exercise utmost vigilance to ensure full protection of all confidential information coming to its knowledge. We won't accept any kind of leakage of classified information by anyone. So strong. Borderline threat. We read that story last week about it threatening inspectors even. So they continue with that. And meanwhile, we go along here in the West, the United States and Britain, thinking that this deal, this nuke deal, is going to save the world. How many statements have we heard that really are very similar to that finance minister from Australia? We are absolutely confident. Absolutely confident. That the details of this agreement are sure, fundamentally sound. They'll keep their word. I want to talk to you a minute here about the money behind the Iran deal, as I said at the start. Pretty revealing article in Commentary Magazine by Michael Rubin. what happens when you just follow the money? Says many of the staunchest proponents of the Iran nuclear deal feed from the same trough of cash supplied by the Plowshares Fund, a multi-million dollar group which defines itself as a foundation seeking nuclear disarmament, but which has for several years taken a consistently apologetic line toward Iran. So it's a progressive group. It's a liberal group. It supports the Democrat Party. And it's doling out money to influential writers, journalists, organizations, basically paying for their endorsement of this deal. The JCPOA, or the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, that's what its acronym is, this agreement between the West and Iran, says in the case of the JCPOA, to reach agreement, Kerry shredded at least a dozen, talking of Secretary of State John Kerry, he shredded at least a dozen red lines. The idea that the JCPOA represents the best possible agreement and the toughest peacetime verification regimen is demonstrably false. After all, both South Africa and Libya subjected themselves to far greater and intrusive mechanisms. Then why is it that groups like the Arms Control Association seem to swear by the agreement and have even attested to the thoroughness of the agreement before its details were even negotiated? Before they even knew the details, they said, this agreement is exactly what we need. We're absolutely confident. Well, as it turns out, they were receiving money from this Plowshares Fund. The Plowshares Fund describes itself as supporting the smartest minds and most effective organizations to reduce nuclear stockpiles, prevent new nuclear states, and increase global security. What it has done in recent years, however, is to organize the fund, a broad-based lobby to exculpate the world's worst violators of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty in pursuit of a new progressive agenda. Most recently, its money has come to play in cobbling together ostensibly independent support for the Iran deal. Supposed to be independent support, but these companies that have come out in support of it, they're getting some nice financial perks. And then it just gives us this lengthy list of examples here. For example, Plowshares gives the Arms Control Association $210,000 for influencing U.S. policy toward Iran, and then another $25,000 for an expert workshop and press briefings. It gave the Atlantic Council, a think tank that has garnered a reputation as Washington's most mercantile pay-to-play academic institution, $80,000 to support the Iran Task Force, and another $130,000 for the South Asian program. In effect, Plowshares pays the salary of the Atlantic Council's chief Iran hand that has consistently amplified Tehran's own policy positions in her analysis and programming. It funded the Center for New American Security to give boot camps to congressional staffers on the nature of Iran's nuclear program. In other words, to lobby them. It underwrote the Friends Committee on National Legislation's efforts to, quote, support an integrated lobbying strategy to build support for pragmatic approaches to resolve the Iranian nuclear issue. It gave the left-wing group J Street $100,000 to educate on behalf of an Iran deal. The National Iranian American Council, over $150,000 for its advocacy on behalf of the Iran deal. And that doesn't include money given individually to its staff. National Security Network, $75,000 to educate media and policymakers about policy options to prevent Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapon. On and on and on and on it goes. Buying the support It happens all the time in Washington and elsewhere. It happens all the time in politics. The article concludes, so in short, plowshares spread millions of dollars around to pro-administration groups to support whatever Iran deal came out of Vienna. Whatever the deal was, these companies were going to support it, no matter what, no matter the details, no matter how many red lines were obliterated. It says to criticize the Iran deal would be to risk a significant source of funding. Double digits percentages of their total budget in most cases of these various groups. Seldom did these groups acknowledge the support provided by plowshares. Seldom did they acknowledge it. They just took the money, came out and announced their support for the deal, even before the ink dried, and then moved on. That's the world that we live in. These are some of the groups, some of the leaders, in fact, who are absolutely confident, absolutely sure that this is the proper course of action. Let's conclude by going through 1 Timothy 6, see what the Apostle Paul has to say here about money in particular, or more specifically, the love of money. 1 Timothy 6, in verse 3, it says here, if any man teach otherwise, and consent not to wholesome words, even the words of our Lord Jesus Christ, and to the doctrine which is according to godliness, he's proud, knowing nothing, but doting about questions and strifes of words, whereof comes envy, strife, railings, evil surmisings. Verse 5 says, perverse disputings of men of corrupt minds and destitute of the truth, supposing that gain is godliness. From such, Paul says, withdraw yourself. He's saying here in this passage that evil men assume, they assume that gain is godliness. Or that if you're accumulating money, as long as the stock market goes up, everything's good. As long as Planned Parenthood makes money, everything's good. If the body parts go all over the world, try to disguise it. Try to make it look like it's not an actual body part. This is big business after all. It helps us financially. The bottom line, I mean, it helps us financially. If we come out and voice our support for this nuclear deal that clears the way for Iran to build a nuclear bomb. Never mind the threat that it poses to the West or to the little nation of Israel. Bottom line is, we've got to keep this project funded. Verse 6 says, but godliness with contentment is great gain. That's the kind of gain that God wants us to set our sights on. Godliness. Character. Righteous character, with contentment. You need that too. Down in verse 10, it says, for the love of money is a root of all evil, as it should read. It's not the only root, but it certainly is a root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. Money of itself, of course, is not, it's not evil. We have to have a proper respect for it. We have to spend money wisely. But this inordinate love, actually this inordinate lust for money, look at what it leads to. The lying, the cheating, the stealing, the organized crime. the murder, the suicide, the war. Look at what is justified. For a love of money. America's first president, George Washington, he said, few men have virtue to withstand the highest bidder. Few men are able to withstand the pressure that comes from the highest bidder. Most people can be bought off, in other words. What does that tell us about human nature? What do any of these stories we've gone through here today tell us about that carnal nature in man and about what needs to change with God's help and inspiration? What needs to be healed? As I covered yesterday, like a great sickness and disease. Yes, we need a physician. We, the human race, humankind, we need a physician to heal the sick human heart. We need these precious words of God for spiritual nourishment and strength. God will provide. He will provide if we humble ourselves. If we come to Him and say, Lord, show us the way. It's not in man to even know how to walk. We need You to help us. We need You to show us. Don't forget about the trumpet hour coming up just at the top of the hour here in a few minutes after the headlines. You're listening, of course, to KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. This is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. I'm your host, Stephen Fleury. The live stream can be received at kpcg.fm, anywhere in the world where you have internet access. Send us your feedback, of course, to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. We'll see you again tomorrow.